Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. Lonnie Givens is the Director of Global Medical Affairs Training and Development at Ultragenyx Pharmaceutical. He leads a team of specialists who provide, train, and support various internal medical affairs professional roles across 15 rare and ultra-rare genetic disorders and treatment modalities. Prior to this, Dr. Givens served as a senior medical science liaison, where he focused on rare diseases such as X-linked hypophosphatemia. He's worked as an MSL and senior sales representative for Eli Lilly and as a pharmacy manager for Target Pharmacy. Dr. Givens holds a PharmD degree from Midwestern University Chicago College of Pharmacy and a bachelor's degree in chemistry from Illinois State University. In his free time, he enjoys mentoring, volunteering, and spending time with his wife and daughter. Hello, Dr. Givens, and welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hello, Iqbal. Pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for hosting me today.
I'm so excited to have you on the show today. There's a big history between you and I. We share an alma mater, and we've actually seen each other progress throughout the course of time. So having you on the show today is my honor and privilege, and I'm very excited to have you share your story with our listeners today. Lonnie, I know that there's many people that are going to be tuning in and meeting you for the first time. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you formally introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Thank you again. I'm very excited to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity. My name is Lonnie Givens. I'm a Chicagoland native, and currently I work as Director of Global Medical Affairs Training and Development at Ultragenyx Pharmaceuticals. When you ask about how we take it to a higher level, I have to go where where I am in learning and development is we focus on, for those that may not know, in pharmaceuticals, there are really two sides. There are the commercial or marketing side, and then there's the medical research side, which is where I sit on. And my department, I lead a department that's responsible for really the education of these medical professionals who typically are PharmDs, MDs, PhDs, those that have had high clinical education. And they're really supporting the research here at Ultragenyx, as well as educating on, in this case, rare and ultra rare diseases.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that you mentioned the types of individuals that constitute your team. These are healthcare professionals who have had experience in a patient-facing provider role and are now leveraging both their knowledge and their experience to help educate other prescribers, researchers, and we're going to delve all into that because I really want to help my audience and myself understand like how Ultragenyx and maybe the industry differentiates rare versus ultra rare. But for those members that are listening today to the podcast and maybe are thinking, you know, I've never heard of Ultragenyx, let me share with you some knowledge about the organization. This was a company that was founded in 2010. It's an American biopharmaceutical company that is focused on improving the lives of patients with both rare and ultra rare genetic diseases. And it does that in four modalities. It actually does it through research, through advocacy, advocacy, through educational incentives, and by providing access to patients across the country. It's my understanding that Ultragenyx has actually four locations. They have two in California, one in Boston, one in Miami, and that they have several products that they've been able to have both FDA approved, as well as they include the rights to Regeneron's medication and several therapies outside the U.S., including Canada, Europe, and Latin America. What I found very interesting and fascinating about Ultragenyx is that it was named one of Deloitte's fastest growing technology and life sciences company in North America in 2 years consecutively, 2020 and 2021. It was also named one of Biospace's best companies to work for. So this is like, and I hate to use this pun, right? But it's a rare gem in an industry that is very, very competitive when you think about new medications that are so focused on, when you think about pharmaceutical companies today, there's so many disease states. And here is a company that is like focused on what I would say is like a rare opportunity to be able to make a massive impact on a small population, but that really is neglected. So I'd love to be able to learn a little bit more about that. And there are several questions that I have, Lonnie, but I'll let you pick which one you'd want to go first with. And the first one was what I mentioned earlier, is like this distinction between rare and ultra rare. Myself as a pharmacist, I don't know the difference. I know when I think of a rare drug or a rare disease state, like it only impacts like maybe 20,000 people or less in the country. But please, educate me and my audience today. Like, How is this distinction made? What does that constitute? And what are some of the medications that Ultragenyx and your team are focused on today to help providers and patients really understand what's available out there for themselves or for their children and families?
Great question. I think to answer your first one about distinguishing between rare and ultra rare diseases, you're absolutely right. It really comes down to prevalence. It really comes down to how often do we see individuals or identify, I should say, individuals that have said disorder. And so I can say this, when you think of the rare, those numbers, incident rates are kind of in line where you see one in 20,000 or so forth. But we also have disorders that we focus on where there's the incidence rate, some of it is unknown, right? Because they're so rare and difficult to identify. It could be, one in 100 or one, excuse me, one in a million, my apologies, and no pun intended, but it could be, that would define as more the ultra rare. So very rarely seen. I keep using the same word, but it's just the fact of what it is. I think when we think of some of the disorders, I would say that Ultragenyx supports, and I will say that my opinions are not necessarily as an employee of the company, not the employer's perspectives. But the one thing that Ultragenyx does is that we spend a lot of time and rightfully so, really trying to understand the burden of the disorder for the patients, but also for the caregivers in some instances when you think of pediatric patients. And that I really appreciate because, always sometimes individuals can assume a lot, right? But when you really have conversations with the patients and caregivers through our advocacy work, for example, sometimes it really sheds light on how you can better support these patients and your goals from that perspective.
Lonnie, tell me a little bit about your team. Like, I think that the work that you do is phenomenal. And I know that, you yourself have a very strong track record. We're going to talk about that shortly. But, I also know that as a leader, nobody ever does it alone. Talk to me a little bit about your team. You said it's made up of several pharmacists and other clinicians. What are the medications that you and your team are responsible for teaching and training? And then how does that play into what you maybe have either recently had as a successful moment where you can talk about that, where Ultragenyx was able to move the needle in a particular space, or if not, maybe something that you're focused on today? Because I know we're talking about a small subset of an entire, global, let alone, a national population. But the work that you do is very important, and it will be very fascinating to hear what a day in the life of a director of global medical affairs at training and development looked like.
Absolutely. So I will say this, it's very, so myself and my team, we work very closely with our, really our global medical partners. So as global, and so, you know, various partners in Europe and Japan and various parts of Latin America, for example, and of course, North America. And you're right. It's never what we do. We're never focused on doing anything in a silo, making assumptions about where the gaps are in knowledge, because we really focus on ensuring that, let me put it this way, our field medical teams reactively can have conversations about research, about ultragenics as research in this case, or about disease education. Not necessarily do so in proactive standpoint. So a lot of what we do is reactive. Most of what we do is reactive. And that really has to do with tie into our compliance, right? We have to make sure that we do things appropriately. So my team, we have around 16 different disease states that Ultragenics, the company, focuses on right now. And so it's really genetic disorders that are monogenic. So a single gene that can be that is or can be identified, has been identified, and might be a more of a direct approach to supporting patients from a treatment standpoint. And in most cases, these patients, because it's rare and ultra rare diseases, there may not be a treatment on the market right now. So some of it is that really trying to understand the disease, I think, is very important. And we spend a lot of time focused on that. Again, what really is going on in the real world? What is the conversation like with clinicians? What, how can we better help them? I see a patient, a clinical presentation of a patient, but then know that maybe I need to do some different type of testing in this particular patient to rule things out. So again, genetic disorders, most of the time, you know, it is, you know, I would say whether it's X-linked dominant, autosomal, recessive, but some things, these diseases that we're looking at aren't on newborn screening, for example. So new parents, and unfortunately, different states have and countries have different approach to newborn screening and those types of things. So sometimes these patients go unnoticed, and it's not because of the great work that physicians are out there doing. They're certainly providing great care. But again, these are diseases that might not be top of mind because they might not see them as often as they see patients with other more common disorders, I should say.
Lonnie, you mentioned that your organization really focuses on 16 different diseases. And I'd love to have a better understanding of, you know, what experiences you as a leader and as a director have had in the past with which disease states, and which ones do you currently support today? I mean, it's a large number of, you know, it's a large responsibility to know all of that. And as we mentioned earlier, right, like I know that you have a team, but it'll be fascinating to know, like, both which ones that you support, but how you develop the acumen in each of those. Like, it's not, you know, it's just something that you just learn in pharmacy school and suddenly you go out and you're like, yes, I'm a subject matter expert in four of the 16. It comes with practice and time and exposure. So
it certainly does. And thank you for that. I would say that the main, so I've been at Ultragenics for 5 years now. Prior to coming to Ultragenics, I was at Eli Lilly for 11. So I've been in pharmaceuticals for, you know, decade and a half. You know, prior to coming to Ultragenics, my main focus at that time was more common disorders, osteoporosis and various muscle disorders, for example, dermatologic disorders, such as psoriasis, for example. Having moved into Ultragenics, you know, the diseases that I primarily focused on initially was something called XLH, X-linked hypophosphatemia. And that is a disorder patients tend to have stiffness and they can fracture, but they really have an inability to maintain serum phosphorus. So because of that, they waste phosphorus, they have bone fragility. And that's where initially I moved into because of my bone experience at Eli Lilly really translated well coming here to Ultragenyx. Having taken on this current role that I'm in, which I've been in for 4 years now, I grew with the company. When I first came here at Ultragenyx, we certainly didn't have 16 at that time. We were, I would say, maybe a third of the size we are now, which is still not very many globally, but it is that. And I really understood early on, again, from my days as a mentor, coach, trainer at Eli Lilly to come in here is that how important it is to educate myself, educate other colleagues in medical so that we're able to offer the best level of support that we can. So to really get down to your question is that I learned along the way. I took interest in diseases that the company had focused in research in to learn a little bit at a time. And it wasn't just me learning myself, say reading publications, for example, it's really leaning on our medical experts here as well. We have a great, fantastic team of our clinical development leads for each of our programs. We have a metabolic geneticist, on staff who's tremendously fantastic in her own right. She's been a professor and still does so many things, and she's been a tremendous asset to me as a learner. Over time, through following the science and understanding as our programs progressed, my knowledge progressed. But really leaning on other experts within the company is certainly not something that's done. No one can do on their own in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, let's say. It's definitely an ongoing education, including myself as well as those on my team.
I love that. And Lonnie, it sounds like, your different departments are very collaborative and they're very open. You know, many organizations struggle with the silo mentality of, hey, we're legal, we're HR, we're this, we're that. Like, we don't share unless there's a problem. And then we just have one representative come in. But it sounds like, there's such a strong cohesive unit when it comes to placing the patient and information and providers, at the center, which I really appreciate and admire. Lonnie, I'm sure that there's other, colleagues and peers that you speak to that are within this space. And there's lots of things that have happened in the last several years, of course, with COVID and, great resignations and just, financial concerns that loom. There's a lot that's coming in down the pike when, organizations and different departments have to think about the strategy to be able to prepare for what's coming next. And, because you're in a specialty section of healthcare, right, you're treating a small population that is usually ignored or just not on the radar for many people. Like, there's constraints that come for you and others. But when you talk to colleagues, both inside your organization and outside, like, what are some of the changes modifications that you see that are relatively close to coming to fruition? And how do you feel that will impact both healthcare providers and patients alike? Do you see this cataclysmic event in 2024, 2025 that's going to rock the industry? Do you feel that, everyone that's in your space is actually well positioned to be able to invest more? I would love to understand a little bit about some of the conversations that take place, maybe at conferences or events, or just to have an understanding of what you would want the audience to know today so that they can be prepared when they're, addressing these or hearing about it for the first time.
Yeah, and that's a good question. I would say, I'll start from my perspective, my team, and kind of what I've seen with the learners that we're responsible for, and then I'll make it more broader. But the one thing I would say in the last few years is that the pandemic situation has really expedited the need to be more virtual and understand what it is, how to engage, how to really deal with day-to-day life virtually. And I say that because, some individuals in my personal life may not have been so savvy to be on a Zoom call or even FaceTime or whatever device that you might be using to speak to someone. But, you know, needing to have or wanting to have access to your family members, for example, is a great example of that. And so what we've seen with how our learners, how our field medical team, our medical teams in general interact with other healthcare providers has been virtual, you know, virtual meetings, although they still do so now at congresses, as you mentioned before. It's certainly, you know, none of us were able to get into institutions to have meetings, face-to-face meetings, and understandably so. So again, how our learners really continue to engage with them, how do they then show up virtually to these meetings? And then again, the same, I think, is for when I think of my personal life, you know, the tele meetings or tele visits with physicians, right? Having those as a ready option is different, right? And I think I think a lot of us saw that coming, but how quickly it happened in the healthcare industry, no one could have known, right? And so we certainly adapt and we continue to adapt from that perspective.
So Lonnie, here's a side question. Do you feel that because when we adopted telehealth and we adopted all of these virtual platforms so that we could conduct business, right? It was out of a necessity. We were all locked down. Nobody goes anywhere. The risk of, you know, contracting COVID-19 was so high for so long. And now we see this sort of shift, right? Everything is kind of like, you see organizations and headlines about return to office and conferences are coming back on live. But, you know, even putting that aside, like when you think about the need today still, because, you know, it's impossible for however large the size of your team is to service all of the healthcare providers that require your services. Virtual health is still a necessity. So my question is, you know, have you found that the quality of interaction and education is diminished when you have to use these types of virtual platforms versus being in the same room, having a conversation with a provider so that the nuances are well received and that some shades of information may be accidentally left out in this type of platform that we're using today?
Sure, I understand. And I would say, well, first of all, in my opinion, nothing will take the place of face-to-face meetings. Having a time with someone, and that could be in any setting, having face-to-face meetings, I think is, virtual will never touch that. But I think that, there are ways to help. I think virtual can help build relationships, right? Those initial connections and points to say, I know who this person is. Sure, I'll meet you for a coffee at a later date. Or if I see you at a conference, at least I know who this person is. And so face-to-face meetings cannot go away, should not go away, in my opinion, because virtual certainly won't overstep that. But I think virtual meetings can certainly supplement that relationship for when we talked about a little bit about the business and, every business, I think, and it's not, I don't think anyone can avoid it, is that, they're trying to pivot and figure out how to navigate the waters, current waters, if I'm unable to get on a flight, but I can still meet with you or we can still have this meeting. Certainly virtual is an option in those settings. But again, to your point earlier about, the teams being unable to support, it is a challenge. And I certainly don't want to say that it isn't. But I think that, understanding that we are very focused on particular disorders where, patients may be, and typically, again, they're genetic disorders. So sometimes there might be a founder effect in a particular area or geography, right? So certain institutions might have more experience in this disorder than others.
I want to piggyback on something that you had said previously that I just remembered that I wanted to ask. So, you know, you talked about within your industry, you know, the needs of you and your team are to react to requests and inquiries from healthcare providers, right? There's no proactive nature here where you get to go and educate and plant a seed. It's literally putting out fires as they pop up. And I'm curious to know, like in your line of work, like, have you ever, you know, been brought into a call, a meeting, a situation where what you had been trained on theoretically was, you know, what you walked into had your theoretical knowledge, like, oh, these are the symptoms, so therefore this is what I should anticipate, and have been surprised. Something that maybe has shocked you. Obviously, we don't want names or, you know, of healthcare providers or patients alike, but it'll be fascinating to know, like, what that situation was and how you or others on your team respond to crises like that, because, you know, you have a very important role to be able to educate individuals, and especially when you're suddenly thrown off your game, it's necessary to be able to maintain professionalism, but then also leverage the knowledge and the expertise you have to guide healthcare providers towards the right direction.
Understood. So let me pause and be clear. So my team in training and development, we support these teams. We don't. I'll give you an example. The medical science liaisons is one of the teams, but we have a dietitians group. We have at Ultragenics, we have a HEOR, which is health economics and outcomes research. We have again advocacy. We also have a department here. It's called the DMP, or Disease Monitoring Program, which is medical. And what that is just about understanding the disorder over time. And so we support those teams that are some in the field. Some may not be directly, so I want to be clear on that we help work with the directors or managers of those teams to understand where the gaps are in education, where the gaps may be in resources for education or for internal education or for external education. So it's really this partnership that we have with other medical colleagues, internal medical colleagues, to ensure that we're really in, I'd say, the customer service business is probably the best way to describe it. So to answer that question, I can certainly answer it, but more from a personal experience, and then also from feedback that we get or what we hear from I'm speaking of the MSLs, they usually capture insights from physicians. And I'll touch on that as well. So from personal experience, you know, I've certainly, as an MSL in my past life, I've certainly been in a position where, you know, you think you know certain things because you've read a publication or you read this particular person's information or publications, but you get into the meeting and you realize quickly how little you know from a real world, what is happening in the clinic. Yes. And I'll give you an example. You know, a lot of what we do, or a lot of the disorders that we support, typically have a dietary component, which is why we have a metabolic dietary program here at Ultragenics and individuals that support that. And so patients and caregivers, not only in some cases where there is no treatment available, diet is really the treatment. And so with that, it's about, you know, what percentage of protein, what percentage of carbohydrate, you know, what percentage, et cetera. And so you read literature and you think you have an idea of that, but then you get in and have conversations with physicians and dietitians who care for these patients. And they say, well, that's what we try to do, but each patient is different. And the challenges they face are different, whether it's a child that's in sports and travel, whether it's an adult who, you know, is, you know, more sedentary or more have a remote role, for example. So everyone is different and you have to approach it in an individualized manner. And I think that's really the important takeaway, not make many assumptions, really take it case by case and do the best that you can.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Lonnie, we've talked a lot about the company and the work that you do. I'd like to kind of pivot a little bit and start talking a little bit more about, like, your career and how it's come to where you are today. You mentioned this earlier. We all know today that you are the Director of Global Medical Affairs of Training and Development at Ultragenyx, but you were also a senior medical science liaison prior to this for rare diseases with the same company. And then, as you mentioned again, you've been a medical science liaison for Eli Lilly, but you also were a pharmacy manager at Target. You've had retail experience with Walgreens as well. And you've had this great career where you've been able to, you know, gather information and interact with both patients and other healthcare providers. And, you know, over the course of time, you've developed this this beautiful skill set and knowledge where this opportunity was presented to you. And Lonnie, I frame my question in with all of this context, because, you know, when I see somebody as accomplished as you, you know, from the outside looking in, everything is always like, oh, you know, he was brilliant in this one role and therefore it led to the next. And it was a no-brainer. So Lonnie said, of course, why would I not? Because I can just transfer these skills and these knowledge and these abilities and have a greater impact. And again, for somebody who's listening to the show today, maybe that's what their aspirations are. Like, they just want to climb the ladder. But it's not always as black and white as it sounds, right? It's not like, oh, I was a senior medical science liaison, and now I'm ready to be a director. I'm sure there's usually some trepidation that goes into the thought process and, you know, what am I getting myself into? What's in it for me? What am I going to lose in this space? Talk to me a little bit about the factors that went into your decision-making process when this opportunity was presented to you. Was it a natural fit up front? Did you just think that, of course, this is exactly what I've been waiting for? Were there some questions that you had of the people that presented it to you? And what was the tipping point? How did you decide that, yes, this is the step I want to take, and what was your why?
Sure. For this particular role, I would say that, It was a gap here that I identified. I knew right away because, you know, a lot of when I first came on, as you already we discussed and you mentioned, I was a senior MSL here, and I actually worked in New York. I was at a New York territory or Northeast territory at the time, and it was great. It's a very small company. I think the great thing about a small company, at least, this is my opinion, of course, being biased to it, is that, you know, it's the one thing about being here is that there is a lot of exposure. You meet a lot of people, you interact with a lot of people, you learn a lot from many different types of people. As you mentioned before, you work with so many different departments. You really have no choice but to lean on each other. So I think over my lifespan or tenure here, I've certainly met some phenomenal people and worked with some phenomenal people, which has helped me as well. So I had we were about a third of the size when I first joined here 5 years ago. Really no department and maybe part of it is coming from a larger company like Eli Lilly. I realized that, you know, of course, I've always been a lover of the library myself and still am. Education has been a great, I recognized that right away and said, you know what, there's a gap here that I, from my experience, previous experience, I think I can help fill. And the opportunity was actually offered to me, you know, and said, that's, you know, and I'm, of course, in a matter of time, I'm saying it was fast forward to say, hey, this is a great opportunity. This is what we need. What do you think? And it was, well, if you think you can do it, give it a try. And so for good or bad, you know, the one thing I can say about here at Ultragenyx is that the medical affairs training department really started with me. And I don't mean that at all in any way. It was one person starting a department that was really trying to address the need to support medical affairs. And then again, really at the end of the day, hopefully patients, and that's what we really seek to do. And it was a difficult thing to do because a lot of it was really trying to understand what different needs were in different parts of the world. So it was a huge learning curve from that perspective. It's not just creating training, it's really understanding what the needs are. And I still do that. We, not just myself, still do that today. But it was, you know, not to be cliche, it was like baptism by fire. It was really, you know, there were some woes and there were some doubts and there was some, you mentioned trepidation for sure. But through it all, I myself, and I believe I can speak for my team, we're very proud of what we have done and what we've accomplished in the time frame. Most recently, I had a colleague who's who was at Ultragenyx, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, and has recently come back and has certainly provided perspective about the different, from an educational, medical educational standpoint, the differences. So again, we're very proud of those, but again, it was never done by ourselves or in some silo. It is through a tremendous amount of partnership from really fantastic, experienced people here at Ultragenyx, and I'm very proud of that.
Lonnie, I love the way that you describe the journey, right? Like, here's an opportunity that is completely uncharted. There's like no map, no blueprint. You know, you are tasked with not just forming a brand new division or department, but, you know, identifying metrics and ensuring that the goals are in sync with not just the organization, but how it will be measured for as a reflection of yourself, but also as your team. And then to train and develop the trainers and developers. You know, these are remarkable times. And you know, I'm glad that they selected you because I feel that you really did have what the company needed, because, you know, it takes a strong leader to be able to look in the face of uncertainty and create a blueprint and create a roadmap that can be not just followed for organizational success, but for your predecessor, for the next person, that you're for your successors, right? So as you train and develop your trainers and developers, like, somebody one day is going to say, hey, Lonnie, you're moving on to VP or SVP or CEO. Who knows what the future holds for you, right? But you would want to be able to ensure that your legacy is going to be in the right hands, and that what you've developed and created is something that, you know, hopefully your team is there for. We talked about this earlier as well, Lonnie. Like, you know, we as leaders, you know, we're tasked with a lot, but we also rely on many other people to help either educate or open doors or create a supportive environment for us. I'd love to learn a little bit more about some of those individuals that were key mentors or key sponsors for you, people that maybe in your role today within Ultragenyx, or maybe at the early stages of your career. Like, are there people that you feel were like, you know, I'm sure there are many people that you appreciate and that were very helpful and beneficial along your journey, but there's always like one or two that, you know, you would not be anywhere close to where you are today had they not stepped in and saw some potential in you that they molded or that they spoke on your behalf in an avenue or in an environment where you would never have access to yourself. Are there people like that that you'd like to acknowledge on the show today?
Absolutely. You know, I will say, let's pause for a minute. Absolutely. I will say that there have been many. I, without naming names, I will say that when I think about my transition from even from Target Pharmacy into pharmaceuticals, or from one company to another, I remember what a mentor have to this day is that when I was nervous about making transitions in my career, it was, but I don't want to make a mistake, right? Should I do this? But I don't want to make a mistake. And he said to me, he said, you know, Lonnie, you spend a lot of time educating yourself and gaining skills and, you know, understanding people. He said, you know, there, you have to gamble on yourself sometimes, right? And there's no losing choice if you stay or if you go. There is no loss, right? It's only learning. And so I remember that even to this day, and everything that I do, and even the mentees that I have now to this day myself, you know, I've certainly learned that, you know, we all, no one's perfect. And there's going to be times that each of us missteps, let's say, but there's learning through all of it. And I wouldn't change any of it. And I, one of, and honestly, not to be Truthfully, when I think about that question, I think of even my wife, where, certainly having her as a person to bounce ideas off of and think through certain situations and, challenges me appropriately in these types of things has been so great for me as well. And I certainly want to give her a lot of credit, through everything. It's been a fantastic partnership, I will say. So I certainly want to give her credit as well, because she certainly had a lot to say, in my professional development. I would say it probably the last 10 years or so. So it's been quite some time.
That is phenomenal. And I absolutely understand what it means to have a strong and supportive wife. I always like to say in this house, like, this king is not a king without his queen. Absolute phenomenal person for me. So totally get it, man. That is, so glad that you said that. Mrs. Givens, if you are listening, we here at Healthcare and Higher Podcast, we are enamored with you, and we absolutely understand where Lonnie's coming from. So that's phenomenal. Lonnie, when you think about the next 18, 24 months, right? I always ask my guests to think about, what is it that they want to see? What is it that they've set for themselves as their own professional goal that they want to achieve? I mean, again, it could be, starting something new within Ultragenics. It could be a certification or a degree. But I'm always curious because, when you hit a certain level, sometimes there are people that just rest on their laurels. They stop and they say, this is it. This is all that I ever wanted. And now I'm here. But in reality, strong leaders and strong, successful people, rest for a moment and then they pick up the banner and then they continue to move forward. And I'd like to have an understanding of what it is that, for Lonnie Givens, when in the year 2025, if I were to call you up and I'll say, Lonnie, remember you were on my show and you said you were going to do X. Like, how did that turn out? What is that next mountain that you're looking to climb and plant a flag in?
Great question. I would have to say, in that time frame, my probably the most immediate goal I would love to move into a senior director role, but not just because of the title. But I'd also hope that my team grows as well, both professionally and personally, along with me. But I also, because of it's a global role, I think I know that there is a need for expanding education around these disorders. And I know that also medical affairs can offer a lot of support from their perspective. So perhaps my team directly growing in that time frame from a personal standpoint, having individuals in, say, Europe and Japan that speak the native language that can also be more supportive from that perspective as well. The one thing is that, being in this global role, of course, traditionally many folks speak English, right, in various parts of various countries. But at the end of the day, it's not their native language. And how can we better, as a department, better serve our educators to then go out? And sometimes it's needed to be done in a native language. And so I, hopefully the department expands, that we have leads of training and development in those in areas, different parts of the country, or different parts of the world, my apologies, and doing so effectively in that perspective. So I would love to see that. And I think that's certainly an accomplishable goal in the time frame that you mentioned. But I certainly have some others as well, from beyond that. But I think that's something that I'm working towards right now. And I'd certainly welcome talking more about that in the future if need be.
I love that concept. And, what I find fascinating about this is the shift in mentality that I'm hearing, not from you, but from like other directors and senior directors, in the sense that years ago, it was, I have this, high performer, and I want this person to go to Spain, or I want this person to go to Japan, right? So let's get them Rosetta Stone and let's teach them the language. Sure, because that was like the solution, right? When in reality, there is talent in Japan, there is talent in Spain, there is talent there where it just needs to be developed so that it's more customized for the organization. And to hear that as like your primary goal now for the next 2 years, to take pride in helping to develop a member of your team to move into that space, I'm really, really proud to hear that. Lonnie, you know, as a leader, like, you know, we've talked about this before, but I cannot stress this enough, is that you have such a strong and heavy weight on your shoulders, because here you are again, you know, designing and ensuring that your team is successful as a department, but then each individual, they are both people and professionals. And there is a responsibility that you have to help train and develop them in both of those areas. I'm curious to know, and even for yourself and myself, right? I'm sure that there's multiple resources that we turn to for information, education, inspiration. You know, I'm a big Gary Vee. I watch a lot of Bishop T.D. Jakes. I think Eric Roberts or Eric Richards is another person. And I just glean information, right? But as a leader, I've been able to learn from their mistakes and from their light, from their teachings, and imbibe it so that I can avoid those mistakes. What are one or two individuals, or they could be speakers, leaders, businessmen, or resources that you turn to for your own leadership development, and ones that you share with mentees today to help them overcome their challenges and then help them become better leaders themselves?
You know, the one thing I would say, and you mentioned T.D. Jakes, I definitely hear you there, and we certainly are aligned there for sure. But I would say that the one thing that you know, has been shared with me by a mentor, previous mentor, is that, and I certainly agree that it's to this day, I think it's a lot in it, that you know, you should always try to have a mentor, but you should always have a mentee as well. And a lot of that is you know, learning from, right, someone that's had experience. And of course, then sharing your experience, teaching and sharing your experience with others. So not necessarily developing on your own, developing in partnership with others, let's say. But so when I think of books and different things, or I don't have anyone specific that I lean to at this time, but more people within my personal circle. And I have a very close-knit of family, of friends. You know, I say myself, I'm very, surprisingly, I am an introvert, but I do like speaking to people. I do like educating. I do like these things. But when it comes down to it, I do like, you know, the quietness and re-energizing that way. But, you know, I would say, you know, I have very close friends in, say, the music industry, right? That are chief executives in various companies at music. I have family members, or even my pastor, for example. So I do lean on people and ask a lot of questions that to try to help me understand. Really, they're in leadership roles, and a lot of although the business might be different, a lot of the teachings and approaches to developing people. Really taking time to understand your business and how in your role you can help move things in the right direction, let's say. I think a lot of that is the same. And I spend a lot of time leaning on the network of family, friends, and mentors that I've had and still have to this day. And again, reading as well. I mean, I do ask about books that they recommend. And as I mentioned previously, I'm a big advocate of the library and I read constantly. I'm looking to my right here on my desk. I have the three books that I'm working on right now, reading through, but a big fan of history, big fan of understanding historical business, things that happen in history, and trying to understand, are there similarities now? And if so, what can I learn from that? It's been great, and I really do enjoy it.
Lonnie, what are the three books on your desk?
Well, that's very good. The one book I'm looking at now is a book called Adrift.
I've heard of it. Tell me about this.
Yeah. So the book is this book in particular is about looking at America as this focus on America and really how the challenges, economic challenges that we've had, and honestly, how history repeats itself. That's the bottom line. And it's just very interesting. So I can certainly send that to you. But the author is Galloway, is the author. And it's been, I'm maybe a third of the way through the book. So I certainly am looking forward to the rest.
Good. Well, I hope that you will hope you can give me a summary of it. Don't give it all away. I will read it. but I would love to see what your take is on that book, and I'll add that to my list. Lonnie, when you meet people, right, like there's always an opportunity for you to find talent in conversations, in person, virtual, whatever that may be. And when you find that talent, you really want to be able to bring them into your organization, right? Because they may be an asset for you within your team. Yeah. They may be an asset for your colleague in legal or medical science, medical affairs. But there's a certain culture and there's a certain capacity of what it is that would be a good fit for your organization. So when you meet people, I know I'm always curious to know how leaders, what leaders look for in individuals to determine what are the three qualities that they must find in a person through a conversation to say, you know, Iqbal might be somebody we want to talk to, or Mary or John or Jane, whoever it may be. But what are those things that you look for in a person, especially for those that are listening to this episode and are wondering how they can be seen and heard for future opportunities?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, for me, you know, a person has to have passion about something. And what I mean by that is, you know, is it doesn't have to be in the business that you're working in, right? You know, I know I mentioned my father on this before. He worked, you know, 9 to 5, so to speak, every day, but his passion was music and he never let that go. And I only bring up as an example to say that, you know, here at where we are now in rare and ultra rare diseases, there just aren't that many patients. But really what we try to do, and I hope that that we are doing, is that we're being advocates for these patients that maybe in some cases don't know themselves what disorder they have. They just know they have challenges. Or the parent knows that their child has challenges. So I think passion is one about something, being, you know, giving yourself, putting your all into something. And I think that course can translate to business. I think also, communication skills. And what I mean by that is not just, you know, able to articulate, but it's also really when you're having, as a trainer, right? Being able to engage the audience, really understand what are the objectives to this meeting, what are your objectives to this training, what is the takeaway, and hopefully energize them by the end of the meeting. And it's a challenge sometimes on Zoom, but are they excited about what they're doing, right? Simple things like that. So being a great communicator. And I think, you know, just being a person that is I think being a person that is really loves people, really wants to learn themselves, because in this role, as you mentioned before, you cannot rest on your laurels. It's, you know, what you know today, you can know even more tomorrow, because science changes. And the information available to you, with many things, changes every day. So being a constant learner, being able to be passionate about your work, communicate that work, and be engaging when you have the opportunity, I think those are great skills to have from anyone.
Wise words and excellent characteristics as well. Lonnie, when you know, as we start to get close to the end of our show, I want you to be able to share maybe some personal advice For other listeners today, again, most of our audiences are usually either healthcare executives or healthcare professionals that are looking to advance their career. And, you know, when you think about your career, there are certain steps and actions that you probably took at a younger age where you found that that was helpful. And then there were others that you kind of missed the boat on and you just regret that you hadn't done it earlier. And so I always ask my guests, like, when you think about one piece of advice that you would share to not just the audience, but to your younger self, if you could go back in time and, you know, catch yourself and say, Lonnie, you're going to be fine. As long as you continue to do this, or you start doing this today, you will be the success that you imagine that you will be. What would that one piece of advice be?
Be your own advocate, not to say that you don't need others, but to say that you know better than anyone what you're capable of. And a lot of times, at least speaking for myself, I may have thought that because it may not be done well or to quote perfection the first time, that it may not be recognized as good work. But that's not at all the case. You know, as I mentioned before, or maybe I can articulate a little better, there certainly were some bumps along the way in developing the medical affairs training department that we have here now. But you learn and you shift and you pivot and you make those changes. So iteration after iteration, and we're still making changes. But again, at the end of the day, you know what you're capable of better than anyone. And don't let anyone tell you, or in some cases, it might be family members that aren't telling you to be negative, but they're protective and they don't want you to be heard and they don't want you to make a mistake. But at the end of the day, you know what you're passionate about. You know what you're capable of, and take a chance on yourself and never be afraid to do that.
It sounds like we have more in common than you know, Lonnie. It sounds like we've both had that experience in the past, but I think I'm glad that you said that because sometimes we have a tendency to gloss over the fact that those closest to us, while they mean well, are usually the blocks in the road. And they're speaking out of place of love, but without knowledge. Like, they haven't seen you
exactly.
In action. They haven't seen, you know, you shine right. In your glory, right? So they're just looking at you as the child that they know you as, or as the person that, you know, they rely on for only one thing. So I'm glad, you know, can you share with us a story where you realize that being an advocate for yourself, what kind of courage that must have taken for you?
Yeah, I'll give you one example. You mentioned earlier in my career when I made the transition from Target pharmacy as a manager, pharmacy manager to pharmaceuticals. I was having a conversation with my mother about the transition. And at this point, I was a somewhat recent grad, maybe 2 years or so out of pharmacy school. And it was, you're a manager. Why would you do anything else? You know, you've succeeded. Right. And I said, well, this isn't really what I want to try, something different. Right. And I really like people. I really like educating. I really like, you know, being in, and honestly, before I went to pharmacy school, I'm a chemist by background. So I have a degree there as well. So I just thought differently. And I remember, and this is actually what I told my mother, I said, well, you know, if it's not the right move, you know, if I have to eat peanut butter and jelly, then it's just me. I'll eat peanut butter and jelly. And so I think at that point, she knew I was serious about, you know, making the move or transition. And I never looked back. But it was tough because, again, my mother was doing it, as you mentioned, in this case, out of love and not really understanding what I was trying to do and why. It's been great for me, I would say, professionally, and I'm much, much happier today from making decisions like that.
You know, I can't even imagine saying something like that to my mom, but, you know, again, it takes a lot of courage to do that, but it takes conviction. And I'm glad that you had that, Lonnie, and I'm glad to see how far you've come. Lonnie, you've been such a tremendous guest. I'm so grateful that you appeared on the show, that you took the time out to educate my audience and myself as well. You know, very proud to see the things that you're doing and proud to see what Ultragenics as well is doing as well. You know, I wish you nothing but success in this brand new year of 2023, and I'm looking forward to seeing you continue to take healthcare to a higher level.
I appreciate it. Thank you again.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Hire podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.